This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined in studio by Jim Winslow. Jim is on the committee to research and write the history of the Fulton Street Cemetery and of our earliest settlers and the contribution to the foundations of the city. He's also a sixth-generation Grand Rapids resident. Also joined by Christopher Reeder. Chris is chairing the project to renovate Monument Park on Monroe Center and Veterans Memorial Park on Fulton. He also has a passion for Charles Garfield of Garfield Park and Garfield's involvement in preserving and establishing lands for parks. And we're going to be chatting today about Grand Rapids history. How are you doing today, guys?
Great.
Great. Thank you.
So what sparked each of your interests in Grand Rapids history?
Well, for me, I think just having grown up in a family of powers and that, and always being told early on that they had something to do with the early furniture industry, kind of got me interested in finding out more about the family. And once I started finding about the family, I started getting involved in the history of the city and that. And really about the only thing that was left, any remnant that I actually could see in the downtown area was the Powers Theater. And so
okay.
I started with that, and that was really the catalyst that got me
going. And for those who may not be familiar, who was the Powers family?
They were kind of shirt-tail relatives of John Ball.
Okay.
And followed him over from New York and also through New Hampshire.
Okay. And how about yourself, Chris?
So I first got interested in Grand Rapids history with the controversy around putting the Kroc Center in Garfield Park
a
good few years ago. And that led me to look into Charles Garfield, and the park has this amazing deed with it. And it's like 16 pages, and it's about the wishes for the of the Garfield family for the park and its use. And that was really interesting. And then the more I learned about Garfield, the more fascinating he became. He was a state legislator, and he was one of the guys who proposed saving Michigan's trees during the logging boom. And so when he was in the state legislature, one of his thoughts was that we should make tree preserves. And everyone, you know, at the time said, well, we've got 200 years before the trees will be gone, will be great. And before he died in the 1930s, you know, most of those trees were gone. So at the time, he was viewed as a kind of crazy guy, and later he was viewed as a visionary. But he just had had one accomplishment after another. And then that just ties in with everything else. He was on the planning commission, and he laid out Jefferson Drive along Garfield Park when his land got annexed in order to keep the city from extending Jefferson Street right through his house. And, you know, so it's just fun to see how he influenced the city and where the city's gone from there.
Sure, and most people obviously today just know him simply because of a park. Now, let's go back in time. So who were some of the early prominent settlers of Grand Rapids? And in following that, who were some of the ones who had a hand in the development of the city going forward?
Well, I think it definitely was the lumber barons and that kind of kick-started the development of the city. But I think really go further back to the natives and the fur traders and that settled basically Grand Rapids because of the rapids, I believe. Because it was, a source of food for them with the river. And the floodplain there on the west side, the swamps and the floodplain, was probably good fertile soil for farming and that. With the virgin forest, basically, in the state of Michigan, and especially with the river. The rivers were the highways of the time.
Right.
So there was transportability easily out to Lake Michigan and off to Chicago.
Now, was there one person who was kind of looked at as being the settler of Grand Rapids, who spearheaded things?
Well, we have the two early settlers, Lucius Lyon and Louis Campo, which kind of with the whole feudal thing with how the city was going to be set up and arranged in that. But I think what you're getting kind of at is John Ball. I think when he came in, it was through his being a land speculator and buying up a lot of the lands from the government and working with the early settlers.
Okay. And Chris, anything you'd like to add about early settlers that you're familiar with?
Well, to continue Jim's thought about the natives, in Belknap's History of Grand Rapids, he talks about the groves of trees that were planted, fruit trees. So essentially like orchards that could be found throughout the river valley, as well as the mounds. And the Native Americans who were here when he was here, or a little bit earlier, didn't know who built them. So it was clear that those mounds or who planted the orchards, and those orchards had been, were representations of a long history of habitation.
Right.
So, one of the other interesting things is you've got Joe Guild building the first frame house right about where the McKay Tower is. He marries, it's the first white marriage, and he marries the daughter of the Burtons.
Okay.
So that's all kind of interesting, fun stuff.
Now, the river, obviously, is an obvious reason. I mean, is that what made the area attractive to these settlers?
I would think so. Just in the studies that I've been tracking even the family back, I've seen very similar incidences where settlements are built upon, rapids or some sort of waterfall, so that it's like a source of power.
Well, and you also have, if you think of the river as a freeway, at a rapids, you have an off-ramp.
Right.
So, people had to get out of the water, which made it a perfect place for the trading post. Away it went.
Now, right now, we have a project looking to restore the rapids. What's some of the history of, why the rapids were removed and, what's a good, why we should add them back?
Well, I did a little research myself.
Sure.
I didn't know all the little details, but in 1835, when they were starting to build the East Side Power Canal, which was the first of the canals, that they had built a log and earthen dam to direct the waterway into the canal.
Okay.
And they initially had planned to put in a lock at the end of the canal, which would be about where Bentham's is now. Is about where the lock would be.
Okay.
And so because the river was never fully navigable because of the rapids, they had made plans to put this lock in, and by 1842 they had spent all the funds, and the lock never did go in. So they had steamers that were paddle wheelers that were running north of about where the dam would be, about the 6th Street Bridge.
Okay.
And then, of course, south.
Okay. And what was the reason that things were changed up with the rapids and they were essentially removed?
Well, again, for the power for the canal, they were starting to put in sawmills and the furniture, logging.
So it was
logging.
Related to that, then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Once they put the canals in and redirected the water and exposed that riverbed, they were probably smoothing it, thinking, if we get out the rock shelves, it'll be, safer for boating. But also that was a nice source of, material, because you had rock exposed right there on the river bottom that they could, get to, and they used. So I think some of that's in St. Mark's, and there's that other little house down by 6th Street Dam.
The Turner.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I also believe the downtown was laid out maybe a little bit differently before we set foot here. I know that if you go into some downtown buildings, you can see the original basements of Grand Rapids. How has it changed, and why did it change?
Wow. There was a couple high hills in the downtown area, Prospect Hill being the highest, which is about 60 feet. It about went to the peak was actually about where the Waters Building is now.
Okay.
And sloped down from that in the direction of the Flatiron Building. That there was a couple other hills east of that towards.
So those hills
Division.
Were all removed and filled in.
They were. I'm trying to remember the year on that, but I think it was the mid-1860s.
Okay.
That they started to bring those hills down. There was a contract to bring that down and start to fill in the the river between the islands. There were four islands also.
So was that because of flooding issues? So, I mean, I remember seeing some photos, but then again, maybe now that I think about it, those photos were from the 1900s, so I don't know what's changed. I mean, because if you're talking about the 1860s, with that work being done, that predates the floods.
Right. That does predate the flood.
Right.
What happened with the 1904 flood, which was went pretty far on both sides, mm-hmm. That's when they decided to put up the flood walls that we okay. actually see today.
Okay, okay. And you said that there were islands down there. Do you happen to know where those islands used to be?
The J-Dub would be on
okay.
one of those islands.
Okay.
Part of, I believe, the Amway Grand.
Okay, okay.
Right behind the Pantland, the Amway now.
Okay.
Would have been a channel and then an island. And there were actually two rather large islands there. And
okay.
The far edges of them are about where the flood wall is
okay.
today.
Now, have you guys come across any pictures of that, or are they just simply drawings? I think I've seen drawings
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I've only seen drawings.
Floating around like Urban Planet
and
stuff like that.
The earliest photo that I've seen, I think you may have actually posted it, was one of the jail out on one of the islands when they're starting to put in sewers and,
okay.
and doing some, they're filling in the,
okay.
the channel between the islands.
Okay, okay.
And I want to say that's sometime between 1865 and 1870.
And, I mean, the river played a big part in the furniture industry for us. But, I mean, kind of going back to some of the folks we were talking about before, who were some of the key players in the furniture industry being, the groundwork being laid?
Well, actually, when I started to say earlier, I always kept hearing that William T. Powers was, early on in the, mm-hmm. in the furniture industry. And ironically enough, he actually was considered, he was kind of the Ford of furniture because he automated it.
Okay.
He came up with the first factory and had a number of individuals working for him on the East Power Canal.
Okay.
But actually just before him was someone he worked for, and that was William Haldane.
Okay.
William Haldane's pretty much the father of the Grand Rapids furniture industry. And he, William T. Powers, actually was an apprentice to William Haldane for about a year.
Okay.
And then went off on his own and eventually joined partnership with one of John Ball's nephews.
Okay.
And again, the factory was on the east side power canal, about where the DeVos Place is today.
Okay.
And then another first that they had was a showroom,
okay.
a ware room, as they called it. And what they would do is that's where the final product was finished.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about where Flanagan's is today.
Okay, okay.
That's good.
And any of the, those who forged the furniture industry, you want to share with us, Chris?
Not in particular. Jim's a little bit more of an expert on okay. the subject than I am.
Now, I know each of you have some favorites as far as historical figures. I know, earlier we were talking about John Ball with you, Jim, and Christopher, Charles Garfield. But I guess, many majors know of him from, the park and the zoo. But can you kind of maybe get into some more detail about, the backstory on who these individuals were and how they came to prominence in our city?
Well, I think the book Born to Wander,
mm-hmm.
the autobiography of John Ball that was reissued for the 200th anniversary of his birth.
Oh, wow.
In 1994.
Mm-hmm.
That really gives a really good background of who he was and mm-hmm. what he did. And that's a whole show in itself.
Mm-hmm.
John pretty much, he grew up in the mountains of the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
Okay.
And he had 9 siblings. There was 10 Balls, and actually there were 10 Powers kids.
Okay.
And they were in adjoining towns, and they intermarried. A couple Balls married a couple Powers. And,
okay.
And that's why they kind of stayed tight-knit all the way through.
All right.
From New Hampshire to New York to Grand Rapids.
Okay, okay. And he was a land speculator.
A land speculator, yes. It was actually a number of investors in New York that had sent him to Michigan when the lands were opening up sometime after 1835, 1836.
Okay, so he's kind of at the right place at the right time,
exactly.
so to speak, for
exactly.
you know the city to be able to begin to flourish and grow. And how about Garfield? Tell me a little bit more about him.
Well, Garfield's dad moved here, and he bought the farm from the Burtons, Arnie Burton. And he built a house that stands right where, on the south side of the road, where Jefferson tees into Burton. So that's William Garfield's house. And he was in the state legislature, and, you know, he was really prominent. Garfield grew up in Grand Rapids, and he taught school for a while, and then... He had a medical problem, and they told him he shouldn't probably do a lot of stuff indoors. And then he went off to Michigan State, and he was one of the early early students there. He became an early faculty member. He did some of the worked with one of the professors there, Beale, on some early genetic experiments with corn. I mean, they were doing really scientific crossbreeding. So it's pretty cool stuff. And then. He came back to Grand Rapids and set up a couple of businesses and got married, and his dad had started the Grand Rapids Savings Bank. And
so,
you know, he became a part of that. And really, then you start looking at him, and he's, like, on every board in the cities, you know, on the Planning Commission for years and years, even though he lives right outside the city. He's really involved in the parks. He was president of the American Pomological Society in the Michigan society, and he was really responsible for, he's considered like one of the three guys who brought fruit farming to Michigan.
Okay.
So he's like the Johnny Appleseed of Michigan. And
okay.
It was him and Beale, his old professor, and unfortunately the other guy's name slips my mind.
But, okay.
You know, he's just significant, although I think often overlooked.
Okay.
And, you know, and when he was nearing retirement, I think it was in his retirement, the city threw him this huge party downtown and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of guests. And it was just it was probably, I think, late 20s or maybe right there in the early 30s. And he dies in 34. But in the meantime, he's given Garfield Park and another little pocket park on the far side of Eastern. And, you know, I think he worked on the master plan, the 1920s era master plan, which is significant.
Okay. So, pretty big player in the city.
Yeah, just a neat guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes across as really likable in his writings. And yeah, I think he's definitely someone that can serve as a good example.